by definition, as being humans, wanting to live with other good humans, then when we run into people we want to perform better, we want to change them, right? We want to fix them. And it's people's lives actually just go down a totally different path when they wake up and have the realization that you cannot change another person. Now, let's explain that. That does not mean that you can't be a change agent in somebody's life, that you can't influence them to change, that you can't order circumstances and order your relationship with them in a way that maximizes the probability and the opportunity for them to change. But it does mean that ultimately you can't violate the reality that they have a choice. And what happens is, you know, you see this with parents and kids, you see it with spouses, you see it with bosses, with somebody who's not performing, they try to light a fire under their belly and get them motivated and push them and get them to, you know, I've told them to do this, and I want you, and how many times do I have to tell you, didn't I tell you to do your homework, and on and on and on and on and on, and try to get somebody sober or try to get somebody, you know, to care about school or, and we have a natural kind of tendency to want to do this. But the reality is you can't make anybody do anything. What you can do is you can be a change agent and relate to them in a way where you can order your relationship that makes it in a way that makes it not work in the way that they're being. Like if I'm a boss, I can't make somebody make those sales calls, but I can order my job for them in a way that if they're not making the sales calls, it's not going to work for them. I can do that. And that will highly influence them. But to just try to get somebody to be responsible or get somebody to be motivated or get somebody to be spiritual, and really where we're trying to take control and drive another person's growth, it never works.
You know, when we're talking about change, most of us are, I guess I certainly will say that, reluctant to change, because generally change means, you know, pain and discomfort. And now you address that we prefer the no pain version, which doesn't really work.
Well, you know, it's an interesting paradox. Again, we're kind of in some ways set up for failure in a fallen world, because the way God has designed our brains, your brain is actually wired to resist change in a certain way. What I mean by that is you have maps of the way the world works, all right? So if you got in your car this morning and you live in the United States, you start driving to work and somebody's driving down the wrong side of the road, like if you're in England or something, then your mind is going to register that as an error, and you're going to blow the horn. You're going to say, foul, I don't want to get back on your side, you know, because we have ways that we're wired to think things work. Now, the problem is that we're wired, because of our experiences in life and in a fallen world, we learn some ways, and we get wired to do relationship in certain ways and performance in certain ways and all of that, that basically don't work. But we're wired that way. And so that's what you're saying. That's when what you're saying is very, very important, that we realize that, you know, I've really got a choice here. There's two options. I can continue to do this and continue to fail and go through the pain of the consequences of one more broken relationship or one more failed job or one more whatever it is, or I can go through the pain of doing the work that it's going to take to learn some new skills and to change, but the outcome of that path is very different. There's pain involved in both. You know, pain is unavoidable. The only pain that we can avoid is the pain that comes from trying to avoid pain.
That goes along with, I think, taking in the big picture, right? Not losing the big picture, because that's kind of part of the motivation, isn't it?
It really is. One of the things you see that great performers do is when things happen, they just don't react to a situation without looking at the big picture and asking the question, you know, what is it that I'm really trying to accomplish here? You know, when somebody does something that might infuriate us, you know, or really bugs us or something, and you'd want to respond to that, deal with it in a certain way or whatever. But when you stop for a moment, you say, wait a minute, now, this person's going to be my neighbor. They just bought this house. They're going to be living there for 20, 30 years. I got to look at, we got to live next to each other for a while. Maybe I want to handle this situation a little differently because I'm keeping the big picture in mind. And we really start to orient our choices and our resources and our time and our energy and our efforts very, very differently in little decisions when we keep the big picture in mind.
In the second part of the book, you talk about the now what, and you refer to it sort of as the wake-up call. And there are a number of ways that we can wake up. And I guess just say a word about how we get started in turning things around.
Well, that's kind of the $64 question, right? And what the big wake-up call is when we recognize that, I don't really have a problem here. I think the problem is this, this controlling person that, drives me crazy or this, whatever it is. What I've got is I've got a pattern in my life of being vulnerable to that kind of person because these kind of people are everywhere, right? And if I look back, I remember one time I was doing a group, and this lady said, I get it. I've been married to 9 abusive husbands, and I don't want to do that anymore. And this other lady says, Mabel, shut up. You hadn't been married to 9 abusive husbands. You've been married to 1 abusive husband with 9 different names. And she recognized, she thought all these men were the problem, and certainly they were problematic. But her problem was she was just attracted to a certain kind of person. And so the wake-up call is realizing that we all have patterns that we need to address. And once you do that, then you have to ask the question, okay, so what do? I just make a New Year's resolution and I'm not going to do that anymore? No, that doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is that these patterns are hardwired into us and they're just part of our makeup. And you can't just make a choice. Moses tried that. He came off the hill with 10 choices for people, right? And what the Bible tells us is that that's powerless to change anybody. So we can't just say, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. We must say, I don't want to do that anymore, and then ask the second question of, so what's it going to take for me to ever do that again? And that's when we get to the real revelation that the Bible and all of science affirms. There's no such thing as self-help. You can't say to a car, it's out of gas, well, go get some self-gas. It can't. And when we realize that God is the only self-sustaining entity and the rest of us draw everything we need from outside of ourselves, then you bend the knee and you bow to the reality of what I like to call open system change. If you're a closed system trying to just change yourself, it's not going to work. But if you open up to two things, a new energy sources or, a lot of new energy sources and new intelligence. So we need fuel, we need energy, and we need intelligence to order that energy, which means you open up to God, you open up to other people, you get support, you get mentoring, you get some coaching, you get some help, then we can change pretty much anything. But it's hard for us to do that second step and then to know, what kind of intelligence and what kind of people we need around us.